Well, indeed, things are always changing. This year ahead of us, 2012, will certainly be a year of change for all of us, for you as a congregation and for me as my own journey in ministry goes on, both with this congregation and then in the latter part of the year beyond it as well. So I'm very pleased to welcome someone who's going to be in touch with us along with some folks from our district office as we embark upon this transition time. Reverend Keith Crone, whom you met earlier with a very delightful story there with our children. He is the director of the Unitarian Universalist Association's Office of Ministerial Transition. Before he took that post, Keith, after he graduated from the Starr King School for the Ministry, headed up the UUA's Office of Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, Transgender Concerns. So this is not the first time he's had contact with our congregation. We were in a conversation with him when he held that office, and we were working our way and doing the Welcoming Congregation program, which I certainly regard as one of the more significant parts of my ministry here with you. So Keith, it's great to have you here today talking about the promise and challenge of transition. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Good morning. It's hard for me not to wonder if I'm the only visitor to the state of New Hampshire this week who's not running for president of the United States or part of the media covering the people running for president of the United States. But it is very good to be here. For some reason this morning, I'm reminded of the children's story of Chicken Little. You may remember it. An apple falls on Chicken Little's head. Chicken's Little interpretation of this event is that the sky is falling, and Chicken Little runs around clucking that anyone who knows of this will share in her concern that the sky is in fact falling. Now, interestingly, there are versions of this story in almost every tradition around the world, from Br'er Rabbit to the Buddhist Jataka tales. And the story was even used by the United States government in World War II to discredit totalitarianism and Nazism. In some versions of the story, the chicken and all the animals it brings with it along its journey eventually get eaten by a fox. The moral of that story is not to believe everything you are told. In other versions, they make it safely to the king and queen, and the moral of the story is to have courage. Now, my suspicion is we are going to hear a lot of the version of Chicken Little this year in this presidential election cycle. But it's a story that gets played out in many places, including for some congregations in transition. As anytime anything new or something that seems to be new happens, it is not uncommon to believe that the world is going to end because the sky is falling. We as Unitarian Universalists are not immune to the Chicken Little story. In fact, in the over 20 months that I've been the director of the Transitions Office, I've run into that story more than a few times. I've seen it quite frequently when the beloved pastor of a long-tenured ministry announces his or her retirement. The role of Chicken Little is often played by a well-meaning congregant or a group of people in the congregation, or on more than one occasion, the retiring minister. What sometimes happens is people get riled up, but sometimes they don't. Often someone does get riled up enough to call my office, and I have a conversation with them. Anytime there is perceived change, there is anxiety. Or as Virginia Satir once said, people prefer the certainty of misery to the misery of uncertainty. We are, even as Unitarian Universalists, creatures of habit. We like our routines. We like our coffee. We like our Birkenstocks. We like our intellectual stimulation. We like singing Spirit of Life. Whatever our rituals are, we like them. We, like pretty much every other group, would be much happier if other people changed and not us. Indeed, you ask any person going to any church in any denomination, when they fell in love with their church, and you get some interesting stories. You may remember your own story. I certainly remember mine. I was 23, teaching third grade in Lexington, Kentucky. And I fell in love with the Unitarian Universalist Church on a Saturday night. I was at a bar. It was about 10:30 on a Saturday night in Lexington, Kentucky, and I was talking there with a friend of mine. The friend said to me, "You talk a lot like someone I know, a friend of mine, and he just walked in. I want you to meet him." And he introduced me to this man named Charlie. Charlie, I learned, was the minister of the local Unitarian Universalist Church. Now, you have to understand the context of this. I'd spent much of my life in Kentucky, growing up there, and I had been forced to go to a Southern Baptist church throughout my childhood. The donuts were occasionally okay, but I'd pretty much vowed that when I went off to college, I was never going to go to church ever again. In fact, the last time I'd ever been in a Southern Baptist church had been 3 years before that moment with my grandparents, where I distinctly remember the pastor stopping in the middle of his sermon and shouting that some people needed to wake up and pay attention to the Word of God. So here it is, 3 years later, on a Saturday night, I'm in a bar and I'm meeting a minister. It seemed a little out of context. What seemed more out of context was that he was having a beer, and he had to preach the next morning. This is different, I thought. Charlie and I talked for 10 minutes, and I was so impressed, so taken, that I told him I'd see him in church the next day. I don't know what made me say it, but I said it. So I felt compelled to show up. And so I did. And I showed up, and I discovered I was the best dressed person in church that morning. I was also the only person there over the age of 20 and under the age of 40. The people were nice anyway. But the service was a little different. There was no prayer. There was no lecturing or Jesus says to do this. There wasn't even an offering. There was coffee, and a few people were drinking it right there on Sunday morning in the sanctuary. And they set it down right next to their Birkenstocks. The church that morning was celebrating its 35th anniversary of being a church in Lexington, Kentucky. Charlie that morning talked about the need for liberal religion in Lexington. And the service ended with everyone getting up and going outside and circling the building. And on cue, we gave the building a hug. We'd never done that in the Southern Baptist Church before. I stayed for coffee and talked with this nice guy. I talked with Charlie, who said, "I'm surprised you showed up." He also told me that evening the church was starting a building your own theology class. What a concept. One could actually build their own theology in a church. I was smitten. I showed up the next Sunday, and the service was two women from the congregation who'd had an abortion talking about their experience. Charlie shared some of his own thoughts on the subject. The mood was not celebratory as it had been the week before, but it was respectful, and people listened without judgment. When I started attending the Building Your Own Theology class, we talked about Buddhism, Christianity, atheism, agnosticism, Judaism, Taoism, baseball, Tina Turner, and Madonna. And not one of those was ever judged or slighted. I signed the membership book 3 weeks later, knowing I had found a home. Now, the only problem with this story is that it is frozen in time. For me, it became the ideal moment, the ideal of what a Unitarian Universalist church should be, the way I always wanted it to be. But just a month later, Charlie, this new minister who I'd met, announced he was leaving our congregation to go and serve a congregation in Chicago. And the church that I had fallen in love with was going to change. Dorothy Parker once said, "It's not that life is one thing after another, it's one damn thing over and over." The only problem with each of our love stories with our congregation is that we don't want the story to change. So many have that moment etched in their mind. So many want the church to be that one thing over and over, that comfort of a predictable routine. Yet our churches have changed and need to change in order to stay relevant in the world. Can you imagine what this church would be if you hadn't done the welcoming congregation some years ago? If you hadn't done Green Sanctuary work? If we still sang from the red and blue hymnals? Or if all of our ministers were men? We cheer when other denominations decide to allow gay clergy or decide to support same-sex marriage, but it was only when Steve started serving your congregation that the leading concern we had in a Unitarian Universalist church was that if we had a gay minister, our kids were going to be unsafe around them. We have made a lot of change in a very short time. And if we hadn't been open to it, where would we be? There is, of course, absolutely nothing wrong with that moment when each of us fell in love with Unitarian Universalism. Though it is a different question for those of you who are lifelong Unitarian Universalists. Perhaps for you, the better question is, when did you realize this was your home? And on some level, you all knew Steve wasn't going to stay forever. You weren't going to have him stuffed and propped up in the corner. You weren't hoping for that, right? Maybe just a little bit metaphorically, but not really. He will leave. Ministers retire. They move on to the next chapter of their life, and so will you. And you will move into your next ministry. The question is how? Let's go back to our story. Charlie announced that he was leaving our church, and the church was faced with a decision. What do we do? Do we immediately get another minister? Well, we had an intern coming to our church, a student from Star King, and the church decided, well, we'll just have that person be our interim for the year. He was terrific, but he was not an interim minister, and he was the wrong choice for the congregation. He preached some great sermons, was very likable, but he did little to help the church prepare for its next ministry. How do I know that? The next minister who arrived after this intern only stayed for 3 years. And if the UUA hadn't talked to him, he would have left after 6 months. There were a couple of reasons for this. One, the congregation was still bereft over Charlie. Two, in its bereftness, in its grief, the congregation had not clearly staked out its own identity. And it called a person who was a really bad match for the congregation. By the time the next settled minister arrived, dressed in suits every week and in wingtip shoes, I had joined the club and drunk the Kool-Aid of Unitarian Universalism because I was now showing up every Sunday in tennis shoes. The next settled minister kept expecting the congregation to be different, to be more formal. And the congregation kept expecting the new minister to be more like Charlie and lighten up and chill out. This new minister kept using words we hadn't heard before. Words like worship, prayer, doxology, benediction. He didn't understand Southern culture and what it meant to be a Unitarian Universalist in the South at all. And behind the scenes, longtime members fought with him over theology, customs, and tradition. He didn't do things the way that Charlie did, or even the way that the student had done them. So after 3 years, he left. There's a reason we have an interim ministry. And there's a reason why interim ministry works, even when it doesn't seem to. I keep discovering in my work as a minister that even when a bad interim minister comes, the interim minister does more good than the church that has no minister. Here's the way it should work. The minister announces his, her, or their leave-taking. More often than not, a minister resigns to go to a new post, but often they retire. Sometimes they're negotiated out. Occasionally, someone becomes disabled or dies while serving a congregation. The governing board of a congregation, who I'll be talking with later today, and it's called different things in different congregations. In some congregations, it's a board. In some congregations, it's a parish committee. In some congregations, it's a standing committee. They usually appoint a small group of folks, two, three, or four, to select the interim minister. Come by April 1st, you submit an application to my office, to the UUA, and you get a list of interested names of people who are interested in serving in your church. I can assure you, because of your size and location, you all will be popular. This group of three or four folks does some interviews, they do some reference checks, and they recommend one of the applicants to the board to become their interim minister. Most congregations now take 2 years for interim ministry, though we recommend 18 months as well. It is better to do interim work well than to do it quickly. The congregation, especially the leadership, engages with the interim minister in conjunction with the interim minister in preparation for preparing the congregation for the next settled ministry. In a few congregations, the congregation has two different interims, one each year. But more often than not, it is one person for 2 years. Now, after the short 3-year ministry back in Kentucky, we became convinced we needed to do interim ministry. We were told by the guy, by the UUA, some guy in charge of these things, that guy who turns out to now be me, that the interim that was there to shake things up a little bit, and we should go with our gut in terms of who we chose for an interim. We've learned a little more about interim ministry since then, but that was the start. We picked an African-American, bisexual, severely diabetic man with limited mobility to be our interim minister. Thinking as good UUs, we would be providing a job to someone who might not get a job otherwise. Little did we know what we were getting ourselves in for. I think by the time Tom left our congregations 2 years later, two people were speaking to him civilly. Me being one of them. A woman named Susan was the other. Now, Susan and I had never been particularly friendly, but we bonded over this experience in years to come. Everyone seemed to dislike our interim minister because he kept asking us questions. Questions that we had not thought about. He kept talking about us as a social club instead of a church. He made us do this thing called long-range planning, something we had never done before, and he forced us to deal with issues of the use of alcohol on our church property. He poked us about our particularly singular humanist theology as a church, particularly when the pagans began to show up, and he reminded us continually that we came out of a Protestant heritage. This had not been the way things were, and Tom, the interim minister, was not particularly warm and fuzzy. And he kept asking us all these questions about why we did things the way that we did. He even publicly told the story of the fight between the previous settled minister and a congregant who'd asked him to step outside one afternoon. None of us had known that had happened. He made us pay attention to the way we did our canvas. He sent people off to leadership school and off to district meetings. He kept challenging us. There was only a small group of folks from the congregation who attended Tom's goodbye party. And most of those people were there just to make sure he was, in fact, leaving. Our congregation was never so glad to see a new settled minister show up. Kelly, the first woman we'd ever had. What was interesting is following this interest in ministry that the congregation, for the first time in 2 decades, grew in size by over 100 people. New practices started and new people were actually welcomed into the church. The church built a religious education wing, and the church changed its reputation of how it was known throughout the city of Lexington and became well respected. Now, not all interim ministry is going to be like Tom's, because not all congregations were in the place that our congregation was in. In fact, most of our congregations actually have a really good time during the interim ministry period. A good interim minister will, however, ask you questions about who you are and who you want to be. A good interim minister will help you look toward the future and not let your past be your future. A good interim minister will remind you you are not alone. Just so you know, every year about 50 ministers in Unitarian Universalism out of the 1,050 congregations we have in the United States and Canada are leaving their congregation and putting your congregation in exactly the same place that they are. This year we have 54 congregations in search for a full-time ministry. They work with my office, and I act as both coach to both minister and congregation as how they navigate through this process. You all will be assigned a ministerial settlement rep, you may know him, Olaf Nuyar, who will be there to guide you step by step through the process. And the process is really all about helping you find a good match for what your next ministry will need to be. It's not and should be about what you need now, because it will be different. And the work of interim ministry is to see how it could be different. A big chunk of what will happen that will be that first Sunday morning when you have your interim minister here and people realize the sky has not fallen and church will continue. And more will happen over the interim period. And you are not the only place in transition. Religion in itself is in wider transition. And religion itself faces some interesting changes. And you hopefully during this interim time will begin to address some of them. In general, in the United States, religion is in decline. Membership is down everywhere in every denomination. We can blame the fundamentalists for giving religion a bad name, but every organized and in some cases disorganized religions are facing the same problem. How to remain relevant to the next generation of potential churchgoers. Let me give you a few things to ponder. The generation of churchgoers who go to church just because you should is rapidly dying out. The next generation of churchgoers are looking for a place that both feeds them, particularly spiritually, whatever that means, and it varies, and they're also looking for a place that makes a difference. Think about it. All of the children currently engaged in schools and have been for the last 15 years, a part of their education has included some sort of community service work. So they expect that now as a part of their adult life when they go to a church. I want to tell you another story that illustrates this particularly well. Before I took this job, I was living out west in Washington State, where there are no Gila monsters. And I was having a fascinating conversation at my tennis club, of all places, between a young 23-year-old woman who identified as a Christian and my friend John, who is about my age. He didn't go to church and found no use for it. Lindsay, however, loved going to church. She liked the music and she liked the inspiration. The three of us were talking one day at the front desk of the tennis club about all things. We were talking about American Idol, the TV show. We all watched the show, and we were talking about one of the contestants, Adam Lambert. Now, Adam is, if you don't know who Adam Lambert is, he's kind of this modern rocker who wears makeup, including eyeliner, and he pushed stereotypical boundaries around gender. My friend John couldn't quite get beyond the eyeliner or his appearance, and he couldn't stop talking about it. Finally, while he was catching a breath, I turned to Lindsay, the every Sunday churchgoer, and asked, "You don't care that he wears makeup, do you?" She smiled and said, "Not at all. It makes him look great. It's his thing. And he sings so beautifully and so emotionally. I just love him." I told her that when I was her age, there were no Christians that I knew who would have talked about that, talked like that about someone like Adam. She was surprised, and she said to me, "I love church, but I'm not one of those old fundamentalists." When I left Washington to move to New England for this job, she then thanked me for all the good work I was doing on behalf of the church. It made me think that about what we as Unitarian Universalists need to do to attract the next generations of Unitarian Universalists to our congregations. Because it will be different, and it will need to be different, while we still tend to those who are already here. It is a good challenge for us to have to figure out. And some of our congregations will and are failing that challenge. I'm watching a couple of congregations right now decide they would rather die than change. Several people in one of these congregations told me, "If we can't all be humanist, we'd rather not exist as a congregation." It made me think that even we as Unitarian Universalists have our own brand of fundamentalism. I've been reminded of this again recently. The other churches have actually changed, and the questions becomes, will we change too? I was talking with a colleague in the United Church of Christ who said she didn't see any reason why a UU minister couldn't serve a United Church of Christ congregation just as well. Indeed, as I have told any number of congregations, the God we think that liberal Christian churches believe in is not the God they believe in. I learned that while I was living in an Episcopalian dorm in seminary. In talking with the Episcopalians, I learned they all sounded like Universalists to me. And their concept of God was not that of an alcoholic father somewhere up there, but God was only the concept of love. And it made me think we have a lot of Unitarian Universalists with that particular kind of theology. How will we adapt to what's ahead? Perhaps there is no faith that is in a better place for these changes than Unitarian Universalism. What other faith can so easily welcome interfaith families, multiracial, multicultural families, bisexual, gay, lesbian, and transgender families? And when we welcome these families, we attract people who want their families to be in relationship with these kinds of families. Our commitment to social justice is respected, even revered, by other denominations. And words in so many of our congregations, like spirituality, are no longer taboo in the way they used to be. The question becomes, will we adapt? In some ways, Unitarian Universalism is a blending of Eastern and Western thought. We do come out of Judeo-Christian roots. But being a Unitarian Universalist is also as much a way about how you lead your life as it is, do you go to church every Sunday? How will we as a movement work to serve this combination? And when will we work on things like emotional and spiritual intelligence in the same way that we revered intellectual intelligence? But remember, as you go through all of this, you are not alone. There's a whole wide world, both outside and inside Unitarian Universalism, wrestling with these questions, wrestling with transition, and any number of folks who will be there to help you as you move forward in calling your next minister. The sky will fall only if you want it to. You will have lots of people rooting you on because you have and you will continue to make a difference here in the community of Nashua. Have courage. Be open to what's next. You can be grateful for what you have had and look forward to what you might become. You will be ready to move forward because you have faith. Remember, we're still and probably always will be the faith that is more comfortable with the questions than always having to have the answers. Look toward the certainty of change and live with the comfort that our faith can and will adapt. I look forward to working with you over the next couple of years.
Oh, Keith, thank you so much bringing all this fine message to us this morning. And join us in coffee hour for just a little bit. And then Keith, as I say, he'll be meeting with our executive board and our special committee on ministry starting around 11:30. That'll give you a chance to meet and greet and thank him for being here just as I thank him now.